Okay. So I'm going to talk for a while, and then we should have time for some discussion as well on the talk. I'm going to start with a poem. It's a poem by Mary Oliver. It's called The Journey. One day you finally knew what you had to do and began. Though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice, though the whole house began to tremble and you felt the old tug at your ankles, "Mend my life," each voice cried, but you didn't stop. You knew what you had to do, though the wind pried with its stiff fingers at the very foundations, though their melancholy was terrible. It was already late enough, and a wild night, and the road full of fallen branches and stones. But little by little, as you left their voices behind, the stars began to shine. They began to burn through the sheets of clouds, and there was a new voice, which you slowly recognize as your own, that kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing you could do, determined to save the only life you could save. So that poem is one of my favourites, or certainly was at a certain point in my life. And I think I'd felt very struck by this image of somebody on a journey, and this image of the old voice kind of tugging at me and learning to recognise a new voice and learning to follow a new voice. And I suppose for me, when I think about my journey over the last, 15, 16 years since I started practicing meditation and Buddhism, I think that poem for me, or that it sums up a process that I've been in and that I am in and that I continue to be in. This kind of forever journeying beyond the old voices that kind of drag us down, hold us back, and learning to hear the new voice, learning to hear what my heart really thinks, learning to hear what it is I as an individual really think is the best thing. So that poem, it says a lot, I think, about what it is to be on a journey. Yeah, what it is to be on a journey. So tonight I wanted to talk about the Buddha's journey, and in a way I wanted to talk about my relationship with the Buddha as well. So as I said earlier, the next 5 or 6 weeks we're going to be focusing on stories from the life of the Buddha. And for some of you, those stories will be very familiar. For some of you, those stories, you'll never have heard them before, and they'll be a real treat. Yeah, so we'll be, and hopefully they're a treat either way. But I suppose I was inspired to run a series on the Buddha because I felt like sometimes, I think I wrote this in the blurb for this talk, sometimes I think, what on earth is this all about? Why am I here? Why am I a Buddhist? Am I a Buddhist? What is a Buddhist? why Tree Runner, all those things, yeah, all those questions sometimes come to my mind. And I've heard other people asking those questions recently, but also always, they're perennial questions, aren't they? That we have to ask ourselves these questions. And I thought, oh, well, you know, for me, in times of doubt, in times of questioning, I really benefit from turning directly to the teachings of the Buddha in a very kind of straightforward way. So in a way, that's why I thought, actually, this series is really important. So even if you don't think of yourself as a Buddhist, that's fine. There's still loads you can just learn from hearing these ancient teachings and soaking them in and taking what you take from them. And if you see yourself as a Buddhist, well, you can explore how it is to hear the Buddha's teaching and to see how it is to relate to the Buddha as your teacher, as a guide, as a friend. So yeah, that's what we're doing overall in this series. But yeah, when I was starting to think about going for refuge to the Buddha, in a way, what struck me was, how do we work with doubt? So in a way, that's what I want to focus on this evening. How do we work with doubt? So I'm going to tell you a story. So some of you will know this story. It's the story of the Buddha. So the Buddha, before he was enlightened, I'm not going to tell the whole story, I'm going to give some edited highlights. Otherwise we really will be here all night. Anyway, so the Buddha, you know, he's gone, he's Gotama. He's living a kind of very happy life. But he feels, even though he's got all the worldly things he could possibly want, he feels empty. And he goes on a quest. Yeah, the Buddha goes, Gotama goes on a quest. He wants to find the meaning to life. He wants to find the end to suffering. And so he goes on a quest. Yeah, so he too went on a journey, like we are all on a journey. And on this quest, he meets lots of teachers, he takes on lots of teaching, he tries lots of different things, yeah? And he meets these practices, he takes them in, he tries them for a while, he thinks this isn't quite it, there's something more. And so he keeps going on this journey for a long time. Seeking out pleasurable meditation practices, practicing really unpleasant austerities where he's starving himself almost to the point of death. Which is quite interesting. So the Buddha, the Gotama in this journey, he experiences both the extreme of kind of pain and pleasure in those practices. And he thinks, this isn't where it's at. It's not in really blissful, pleasant experience. That isn't the meaning of life. But it's not in forced austerities either. So where is it? And the Buddha has this memory. He has this memory of being a child and relaxing under a rose apple tree. And in that place of relaxation, something unfolds. And he thinks, there's something in that. There's something in that, not striving for unpleasant experience, not seeking out pleasurable experiences, but sitting with the whole breadth of the way things are. There's something in that. So he continues on this journey and he makes this resolve. He sits under a tree and he makes the resolve to awaken to see the truth. And that's what he's doing. He's sitting, he's breathing. He's allowing life to unfold, allowing conditions to unfold. Pleasant experience, unpleasant experience, experience arising, experience passing away. And it is in that experience that he awakens, that he sees the truth of things. But in the legends around this enlightenment experience, we're given this image of the Buddha. So the Buddha's under the tree, And he's exploring experience in that awakening. And as he's exploring, as he's coming nearer to the culmination of seeing things as they are, to awakening, he's assaulted by all the things that hold him back. So traditionally this is called the war with Mara. So Mara, in a way, in these legends, is seen as, the kind of things, what we would know as kind of lust, kind of our cravings, our hatreds, our wrong views, all kind of getting in the way. And they're often, Mara is embodied as a human being, and he's, you read these legends of Mara kind of firing arrows at the Buddha of lust, of hatred, and these arrows kind of falling as flowers at his feet. But I think what's really interesting about this part of the story is, so there's a Buddha, he's striving to awaken, to see a truth, his truth, the truth. And yet, what is the crux of that experience of trying to sit and see the truth is being assailed by doubt. It's being assailed by doubt. So it's all our views of, I'm not good enough, who am I to be doing this, I'd rather have a hot chocolate, I really don't like that person, oh, that thing happened at work today. You know, it's all that stuff that piles it in at us when we're just trying to sit and listen to the truth. And what does the Buddha do in the legends? The Buddha touches the earth. So that's this beautiful rupa here. You know, we have the Buddha in this mudra, in this posture of just touching the earth. And this movement of touching the earth, it's symbolic, it's deeply symbolic for the Buddha, but for all of us, to kind of touch the earth in our experience, in our truth, to cut through all that crap, to cut through all the doubts. But the doubts come in, don't they? And then we touch the earth. And that's why, in a way, when I was thinking about going for refuge to the Buddha, I was thinking about Mara. I was thinking about being assailed by the doubts that stopped me kind of hearing the Buddha. Yeah. I was talking to Zen earlier about this, before the class, and I was saying, well, maybe I can't hear the Buddha because the Buddha is sat very, very quietly under a tree. So what I can hear is Mara, and that's everything in between. And that's really loud. It's a cacophony of life. And the Buddha sometimes I find very hard to hear, but he's there. So I think what, for me anyway, this experience of going for refuge to the Buddha, of having faith of in the Buddha, if you like, or trusting my own connection with the Buddha, it's been a long road, and it hasn't. It isn't something. It's not like I walked into a Buddhist centre and I thought I was a Buddhist, and the Buddha was apparent to me. I think that trust in the Buddha, that faith in the Buddha, is something which has slowly built up over many, many years. And even now, I can't hear the stillness. I can't hear the stillness of the Buddha because of the noise that gets in the way. And so when that noise is getting in the way, then I have to listen to the noise. And sometimes when I listen to the noise, I can see through the noise. So that's a bit why I want to talk about doubt. Because if we don't look at our doubts, if we don't look at the noise, we won't hear the Buddha. Yeah. So, when I was thinking about doubt, I thought broadly there's doubt. Doubt emerges in three ways. I've made this up. It's not a formal Buddhist list. So, doubt arises in three ways: in myself, in the teachings, or in the context. So just to say that when I'm talking about doubt, I'm in no way suggesting we shouldn't question things. So questioning things is essential. Yeah? So there's a difference between healthy questioning and doubt. Yeah? So we have to ask questions. And the journey is also a mystery. It's something that's unfolding. And it takes a lot of courage to ask questions. So I'm in no way suggesting one doesn't ask questions or reflect on things. But doubt is like this vagueness. It's all this cacophony of stuff that kind of gets in the way somewhere. Perhaps we get into doubt, and we could get into doubt for a whole range of reasons. And hopefully that will become evident when I go through my examples here. I mean, doubt, just so you know, is not a modern problem. So the Buddha talked about how to work with doubt. So 2,500 years ago, he was teaching people how to work with doubt. So it's not a modern problem. And if you do look at the lists, you'll find doubt in the list. So if you look at the five hindrances, what stops us being absorbed in meditation, you'll find doubt. If you look at the 10 fetters, the things that fetter us to conditioned existence, you'll find doubt. So doubt is not a new problem. It's a really central problem to the human condition, and it has been for ever. Yeah. And in a way, that was the Buddha meeting Mara's Buddha meeting his own doubt and seeing through that doubt to awaken you. So as either doubt is something, I think I'm a bit of an expert in doubt. If you're more of an expert, please come and tell me afterwards. So I'm a bit of an expert in doubt. It's probably one of my specialist subjects. So I think about doubt, which some people are often surprised by because they kind of see me and think I appear so confident. Surely she can't experience doubt. But I do. I do experience doubt, okay? So I'm going to tell you quite a lot about my doubt now. So you're going to learn more about me than anything else. Hopefully that's helpful. So I was thinking about doubt. So the first thing I was thinking about where I've got into doubt in myself a lot over the years is in myself as a meditator. So I don't know about you, but has anyone here had that thought of, I can't meditate, I'm not doing this right? I should be doing this better, I should be able to concentrate, no, 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 what is metta anyway? Yeah. Familiar, okay, I'm not alone, good. So I think that this experience of doubt in myself as a meditator, I mean, it fluctuated. Interestingly, I had a lot invested in meditation, so I went a lot of meditation retreats. Every year, I still do, but every year for the first 10 years of being around, probably 3 or 4 times a year, I was on week-long intensive meditation retreats, sometimes for months at a time. And still, I was like, but what is this meditation? I'm not doing it right, and da-da-da-da-da-da. It was painful, yeah? That's painful. And sometime after I was ordained, I was on a meditation retreat, and I was really coming up against this view so strongly that I couldn't meditate, or that I was no good at meditation, because I did a lot of meditation. I did hours of meditation, so it wasn't that I couldn't meditate. I just thought I wasn't doing it right. Yeah, that there was a right way of listening, being with my own experience. That's a bit mad, isn't it? Even in itself, okay. And I would get myself into a real pickle about this on retreats. And there was a point where I just realised, this is just noise. This is just Mara. This is just the old voices. You can't meditate. It shouldn't be like this. Da 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 da. Who said it's true? Is it true? Who said that it's true? It's just a narrative. It's a story that I've created about my experience. And I started from that point of just seeing it as Mara, seeing it as a story, as seeing it as a voice, I could start to work with it. And I remember having a meditation review with somebody, a very experienced meditation teacher, and they just looked at me slightly bewildered and said, Singamati, you just have to trust your own experience. It is your experience. You know what is happening in your experience. And I thought, yes, they're right. Okay, I will trust my own experience. I touch the earth, yeah? So that is, and it didn't stop. So that was a strong habit for me, and it didn't stop. And I'd find myself on a meditation retreat, and I'd find myself back in that place. I still do sometimes, of I don't know what I'm doing, and everyone else is a better meditator than me, and I'm getting it all wrong, and my experience should be like that, and it shouldn't be like this. And I go, okay. Where are my own reference points? What is it I'm trying to do? What am I trying to do? Forget what anyone else is trying to do. What am I trying to do? Okay, I'm trying to feel my feet on the ground, my bum on the cushion. I'm trying to be embodied. I'm trying to be with the breath. I'm trying to notice how I am. I'm trying to notice that that's coming and going. I'm trying to do that in a way that's kind. Okay, that's all I'm doing. That's all I'm doing. That's all I need to do. Doesn't matter what anyone else is doing. That's all I need to do. So I found my own reference points. It took me a decade, if not longer. But I feel like I have found my own reference points in meditation. I don't think that makes me the world's best meditator. But I have touched the earth. I have a level of confidence. And that's hearing the new voice. It's hearing the voice of my own reference points, my own sense of what it is I'm trying to do. Okay. So, doubt in the teachings. So when I was thinking about this, I was thinking, yes, doubt in the teachings, so the Buddha's teachings. And I was thinking, do I experience, I haven't got the answer to this question, do I experience doubt in the teachings? Or do I experience doubt in my ability to understand the teachings? And I wasn't sure. I think my propensity to doubt myself is stronger than my propensity to doubt the teachings. So I doubt my own capacity to hear the teachings more than I doubt the teachings itself. But nevertheless, maybe they're not disconnected. So I think another strong facet of my journey into Buddhism has been trying to understand the Buddha's teachings in my own experience. So the Buddha talks about this in terms of the levels of wisdom. So there is a level of knowing the teachings on an intellectual level, there is a level of reflecting on the teachings, and there's a level of understanding the teachings directly in your own experience. Yeah. So Buddhism goes far beyond a kind of bookish intellectual understanding, and it points us towards trying to really see these teachings in our own experience. And I often find myself saying, but what does that mean? Like someone will come and say, they'll ask me some question about Buddhism, and I'll be like, I don't know. And sometimes I really don't feel like I do. Sometimes I have to say probably one of my weaknesses is I'm not that interested in understanding on an intellectual level some of the Buddhist concepts. And it'd probably be a good thing if I read more and I was more interested on that level. But actually, as it is, what I'm really interested in is saying, what does that mean? Metta, what does that mean? Insight, what does that mean? Enlightenment, what does that mean? Yeah? Bodhicitta, what does that really mean? So these words, some of you know them, some of you don't know them. Some of you might know what they mean in your experience, good for you. Yeah? But me, I'm trying to work out what they mean. I'm trying to work out what they really mean. I'm not really that interested in understanding just in an intellectual sense what they mean. So, lots of readings. So I wanted to refer, if I can find it, to... Okay. I wanted to refer to this passage by Rainer Maria Rilke, which I think just summarises this very, very well. So he writes, "Be patient towards all that is unresolved in your heart and try to love the questions themselves. Do not now seek the answers which cannot be given, because you would not be able to live them. And the point is to live everything. Live the questions now. Perhaps then you will gradually, without noticing it, live along some distant day into the answer." So I think that's the thing. Sometimes we don't have the answers. You know, what is awakening? But we can live with that question. We can live with that question in our heart. How are things? What is the nature of my experience? So we can live with those questions. And I think as we live with those questions, we slowly start to hear for ourselves a bit more the answers. And this quote is quite funny. That's why I wanted to share it. It's by a guy called Aloka, who's been ordained longer than I've been alive into the Tibetan Buddhist order. And he said, in 1976, I formally committed myself to a path of action, ordination, about which I had a whole jumble of ideas. None of these have turned out to be of much use, except their gradual abandonment has provided a path of debris, offering the consolation that I've actually moved from where I started. So I think that's a bit what it looks like, people. Yeah? We've got a whole jumble of ideas. And our doubts are amongst them. And we're just trying to gradually abandon more and more those wrong ideas. So this is what we're doing. We're learning, we're hearing the teachings of the Buddha. Maybe doubt arises. You know, maybe you hear the teaching of shunyata, of emptiness, and you think, what the hell does that mean? Well, good. Good that you think that. Good that you think that. If you think you know, you don't know. Yeah? So good that you don't know. Yeah? But don't confuse the not knowing with a doubt of getting it wrong and I'm not good enough. Because that's just a waste of energy. That's a cacophony of Mara. Yeah, touch the earth. I don't know. But I'm curious enough to see if I listen, if I sit with that question of what is this, that maybe I'll hear an answer. So as I say, I've spent a lot of time thinking about doubt. And so then I was thinking, I was also, to balance that out at some point, I thought, I know, I need to decide what I've got faith in, as well as just doing war with doubt, yeah. So sometimes we have to think, it's like working with, I don't know if you might relate to this more, you know, if you've got unpleasant experience going on in life, pain maybe there's difficult things happening, stressful situation at work. Life is painful, but we need to balance that pain with also looking for the good, looking for the simple pleasures, looking for the beautiful sunset, looking for the nice warm cup of tea. Yeah, we need to balance that. And that's the same in the spiritual life. Yeah, if we're spending all of the spiritual life battling against our doubts, we'll get exhausted. So we also need to think, okay, what inspires us? What are our grounds of faith? I'd like to say if you spend the whole spiritual life just looking at what inspires you, you'll also miss out. So life has this shadow side. It has the brightness, it has the darkness, yeah? Light and dark. Yeah, they're not right and wrong, they're just light and dark. Yeah, they're inspiration and their shadow. Their faith and their doubt. Yeah, we have to look at them both if we want to see through to if we want to awaken. We have to look at both. We can't just look at inspiration and ignore doubt. And we can't just fight our doubt and ignore our inspiration. And some of us will have a propensity just to look at inspiration, and some of us will have a propensity to get bogged down in doubt. Yeah? It's okay, whichever you are. Just know which one you are and know where the balance needs to come. So, yeah, I was thinking for myself, someone who dwells in doubts, okay, what are my grounds of faith? You know, okay, so what is it I'm trying to do? Yeah, I'm trying to be kind. I'm trying to be with the breath. I'm trying to be open, be curious. And that's when I turn to the very simple, direct teachings of the Buddha. So when I was on my ordination retreat 7 years ago, I had this crazy idea to try and learn the Dhammapada by heart. It's not a very long text, it's about 400 verses, and I learnt half of it. I don't remember it now, but I do remember a chunk of it. And I would say those verses are completely formative for me. So they become a touchstone for me. They become a touchstone. So, you know, verses like, the fifth verse. Hatred never ceases by hatred. It ceases by love. This is the eternal law. Like, you don't want to be very far without that verse in your mind, yeah? So we learn these verses. I learn these verses by heart because learning them means that they're there for me. Yeah. The lines like, nothing does one as much good as a perfectly directed mind. Okay, I'm distracted in meditation. I need to direct my mind. Yeah. So just these verses, they keep bringing me back to the truth, you know. And I think, I'm sure there's all been phases in your life, teachers in your life, images in your life that become touchstones for your truth. Yeah, all of you, whether you've been here 3 months, 3 years, 30 years, there will be touchstones of qualities that you're trying to develop, of teachings that deeply move you. And hold them close, treasure them, yeah? And be confident that they are a truth for you at the moment. And that might change, that's okay. But for you, right now, they're a truth. And hold that close. So I just want to quickly say something about doubt in the context. But I'm not going to say a lot because I've already talked for quite a long time and I want us to have some space for discussion. So sometimes we can also have doubt in the context. So in this case, you might have doubt in this context in the Buddhist Centre. True Ratna, is this where I want to be? Are these my people? And that's okay. Yeah, sometimes we have to ask those questions, and it's okay to ask those questions. And I suppose it's, if you have got those kind of questions, it's just really good to approach someone at the centre and just say, can I talk through those questions? I've got questions about this context. And anyone here will be willing to talk to you about your questions. Yeah. So Tri Ratna is an amazing Buddhist community. And at 50 years old, of course, there are things in its history which are regrettable. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about that. But that is the truth of all of us, yeah? All of us, however long we've been alive, there's parts of our history which we'd rather not have happened, yeah? And I suppose we have to learn to live with the fact that life is imperfect, things are imperfect, that things don't always meet our expectations. And in a way, this is the Buddha's teaching as well, yeah? This is the Buddha's teaching of dukkha, of unsatisfactoriness. In fact, unsatisfactoriness is the second of the three marks of conditioned existence. Yeah. So the Buddha was very clear that conditioned things are impermanent, they're unsatisfactory, and they're devoid of fixed selfhood. They're devoid of anything fixed. So that is also true of any context you find yourself in. That's true of any life, that life has its imperfections. And I wonder sometimes if we could just celebrate imperfections, because we all have imperfections. And I think if we spent less time trying to be perfect, that would be a good thing.